Ani bonjour, everybody. Welcome to the Indigenous Environmental Justice podcast series. In this episode on Anishinaabeg food sovereignty, JC Chiblo speaks about her findings to date on her master's research, which she's doing in the Faculty of Environmental Studies at York University. She talks about how the inspiration for what she wanted to do comes from a meeting that she had with youth in the community in response to crisis. And her research, to me, again, really exemplifies what Indigenous research should look like. Her research topic came from what youth had explicitly said they would like to see happen in her community. And she was able to link the priorities that youth identified to her own research interests on climate change and climate justice and how communities around the Great Lakes can respond to that. So she speaks to how she coordinated a on-the-land activity with elders and youth in her community to engage in intergenerational transfer of traditional knowledge. She speaks about how youth in the community didn't really know much about their own leadership, and her workshop provided an opportunity to bring leaders in the community and youth together to learn from each other. She framed this as reciprocity in her research, so the youth would learn about who the leaders are, what they do, how they can empower youth, and how youth can influence decision-making and engage in governance in their own community. And in turn, the leadership learned about the priorities of youth and engaging in land-based activities. So she was able to, in her research, speak to how youth and elders can come together, including leaders in the community, to address climate justice. And what she had learned through different gatherings, Gendaswin gatherings, Anishinaabeg knowledge gatherings, is that it's really important for youth to learn about language and to learn about on-the-land kind of activities. And so her research and her workshop brought together knowledge that can contribute to this broader understanding of climate justice and how communities can respond to that. I'd have to say that her research is really insightful, and I think also really inspiring for other youth, because she's actually acting upon what elders have identified as being a priority: youth to learn on the land activities, to learn the language, and also acting upon youth identified priorities. She and I also presented together at the Assembly of First Nation Youth Environment Summit on this as an example of actually following through on recommendations that elders and youth have made. So I think her research will serve as a brilliant model of how youth can engage in research that serves their communities.
So hi, my name's JC. This is my mother, so some of the things might be related because we are. So Minande Vineshi Kwed Dishtakas, Gitagansi V Donjba, Gigo Dodam Anishinaabe Kwendao. So I just told you my name's Bluebird Woman. I'm from Garden River First Nation, Ontario, and I'm Fish Clan. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what I did for my master's project, and then how I got there, and I guess a little bit about who I am. I'm from Garden River. I spent a lot of time in the bush, because clearly she does, and I've been able to benefit from all of her connections and, well, her research and things. So I actually work for the Indigenous Environmental Justice Project, which is a 5-year SHRC-funded initiative based out of York, aiming to center Indigenous voices in the environmental justice framework, which is really important. Voices like these people here So I actually, part of my project aligns with the IEJ project, which is where why I'm introducing them, because they are my funder and they supported me to research climate change in my community. And there's our website if you want to check it out. We have an annotated bibliography, so if you're doing your paper and it relates to IEJ or climate justice, there's a lot of topics there, really easy to find. So I have to give special thanks to the chief and council in my community because they did show up to my event. My mom's on council, so she was there, and my aunt, yes. Everybody, a lot of counselors came out, and it was really great for the youth to see that they care and that they are here, because when we first had our gathering, they didn't even know who chief and council was, which we thought was not good. And I also had help from the assets program in Garden River, Juanita Jones. It's the Aboriginal Skills and Employment Training Strategy. When I first started talking to people, my mom did help me, these people came up and they said, we wanted to help, and next thing you know, they provided honorarium for everybody, even the youth that attended. So it was really, I thought, a great way to get our community working together in different ways. So a quick note on terms. I am talking about Indigenous food sovereignty and not food security. Food security is more focused on making sure everybody gets access to food, where food sovereignty is more, I find, an Anishinaabek approach, where it's more about reestablishing and maintaining relationships to the Mother Earth, and in turn, that would be better for our foods. So the four guiding principles, this is by Dawn Morrison. She's an Indigenous scholar and came up with these principles, these four guiding principles, with elders in her area. And I found, when I first started reading about this, I thought this was, like, this is what I found a lot of elders and youth talking about when I would read these reports that were posted, or when I would attend gatherings and things like that, where we're talking about sacred or divine sovereignty, where food is a gift. When you think about food, it's our animals and our plants and our medicines. When I'm saying food, that's what I'm referring to, and the water. So it's seen as a gift from the Creator that we need to nurture relationships with and have good, healthy relationships with. And it's really focused on participation, so the daily practice, or even whenever you can practice being out on the land and meeting with the animals and community, even at all the different levels that we have. And I thought self-determination was a really good also guiding principle that she had, because it refers to us to define our own issues and our own solutions, which is really important in the Anishinaabek culture. We do know what we need. It's been out there forever. And then it's also said that legislation and policy is important. And my project, I hope, can in turn influence the legislation and policy in my community, because I did focus only on Garden River. It is a master's level project, so I couldn't go to the treaty level like I originally wanted to. But I hope that other communities can also see this paper and see how Garden River is reacting to the youth input. So I was able to attend the Geek and Dawswin gatherings as a part of my master's program using the experiential learning IDS thing. I got to learn a lot about how important language is to not only the elders but to the youth. And they talked a lot about the importance of relationships, and I guess you kind of heard my mom a little bit talk about it as well. It's very important to have relationships in the community, within the community, across the community, and then even broader at our treaty level, which is what the Geek and Dawswin's gatherings were at that level. And we learned a lot about the importance of youth, and the elders kept saying, like, we need to have youth here, we need to have more gatherings with the youth, and they highlighted a lot that even when they did get the chance to be with the youth, they weren't listening, or they felt like they weren't listening and there wasn't meaningful engagement. And I felt like my mom said, when you get this knowledge, there's a responsibility, like you have to act on it, and which is what brought me to this research project that I'm actually doing, or mostly did. So we had a gathering in Garden River, and the first one was just a quick get them together in response to a suicide and recent attempts. We wanted to get their opinions and ideas on what would make them happy to be in our community or feel safe or anything that they wanted to see. And that's where we learned that they didn't know who chief and council was or what they did, and we thought that was a big problem. Like, they knew that some of their aunties and uncles were on council, but they actually didn't know what they did. So part of the idea that I learned from follows that reciprocity term that academics we all like to use, which is I needed to learn something in order to get information from the youth. I didn't think that it's fair for me to hold an event and just start asking them questions. That's not how I would, I wouldn't really like that either. So I figured out that they wanted on-the-land activities, and they wanted, surprisingly, a school on the reserve. They didn't feel comfortable going into the city, which I think is important to note. They're more comfortable in the community, which is great. And they wanted on-the-land activities, so I decided, let's go learn. Since my mother and I were out and about with the elder learning how to hunt and trap, mostly trap. But since they asked specifically for this, I thought, well, I'm a youth. I don't really know how to do any of that stuff. Like, I know how to fish, but I don't even know how to gut it. Like, I don't know any of that. So thankfully, my mom and I got to go out with the elder, and he was teaching us our traps on the side there while us trying to set the traps. How successful we were, I don't know. I learned quite a lot when I was out there. I learned about reciprocity in the sense where when we're asking for something to take to give its life so that we can eat and have, we made a hat. We're going to make a hat one day. That I have to give something back in return. So the first thing I learned is that we have to ask, kind of how she was talking about. You need to ask and tell it what you're using it for. And the semo was put down. But I also learned about the importance of listening and the concept of bazindam, which was originally brought up in the Gikandaswin gatherings, and I've heard elders talk about, which becomes more and more hard, because you're supposed to listen with your heart, and you're not supposed to listen to think and react, and you're just supposed to listen with your whole entire soul, really, is what my understanding is. And when I was out there, we kind of did have to listen to the animals, because the snow, when we went out there, the snow was all sporadic. It wasn't falling the way that it used to. And Joe said that, oh, this is going to be a hard year to find. Like, we would have starved this year because the trails are different. The rabbits are all over the place. They're all a mess. So then, in turn, we were having issues getting the right spots because they weren't as nicely defined as they normally would have been. But I also learned about creating and maintaining relationships with youth and elders on top of maintaining and creating those relationships with the land. It takes time to build trust, and it takes time to maintain that trust. And I'm sure maybe some of you guys have read some of the horror stories of how Indigenous people have been researched in the past. I wanted to severely not do that and take the complete opposite way. And so in the last 2 years of my master's, I've been hanging out a lot with that elder. And now the youth with the two events, and every time I see them, they're really interested and they actually want to talk to me. And which is, they're like teenagers. And when we were at Little NHL, my sister-in-law came up and they're talking away. And as soon as she came up, they went quiet. They wouldn't even talk about their experience at the Little NHL, which isn't even a personal topic. So the maintaining and relationships within the community to get meaningful responses is really, really important, which is why I took this route. So at the gathering, I invited, of course, Joe. We decided to host what we could do. We couldn't take them outside because the weather wasn't really cooperating. And because they're high school age, there's all these issues with the colonial laws on what you're not allowed to do and what you can do, and it was a challenge we found. But either way, some youth showed up because they really wanted to be there and they wanted to learn. And the elders, that we had an elder and the traditional healer practitioner, what does he call himself? In fact, he was also there with his wife, that's Mary, giving lessons on life lessons, just sharing their Kandaswin, their knowledge with the youth, which is exactly what they wanted. They wanted to get to know their elders in their community, and they wanted to have exchanges, and they wanted to learn some teaching. So that was part of what we did. And then I also thought, well, we should probably tell them what Chief and Council does, since they don't know, and they're about to be voting age. So I made this video pretty much summarizing how Chief and Council came to be with all the fun legality in the back, and they loved it. They didn't learn any of the history in school, like the proper history on how we even came to be. And so I told them as much as I could from my knowledge that I gained. And they all really liked it. They felt informed. And then we had actual some counselors there and the chief so that they could meet and have put a face to, you know, what they're actually doing and things like that. So we actually found out their favorite activity in the bush is fishing. They wish they knew how to hunt. They said they don't really know how. They've watched their parents do it, or they've shot an animal themselves, but they've never learned how to harvest anything or how to take the skin or even how to do any of that process. So I thought that was important to note because they did want to learn that kind of stuff. They were asking for it. And they asked for, actually, when we were there, they asked for a week-long cultural camp. So now we have our work cut out for us. So we went through the whole process of harvesting a beaver and, what was the other one? A mink. Those are small little animals. But they all got a chance to try, the ones that wanted to. The girls were not so interested, but they were there, and they were taking pictures and helping and still listening and learning, because the main point for me was not to have them all like skin the beaver particularly. It was more for us to all be together, because they're all at different high schools as well. All these youth, they don't go to the same high school. So they found it was an awesome opportunity to hang out with their own friends and learn about this stuff. So they wanted to learn at this cultural camp more about fishing, harvesting meat, trapping, how to tan hides, and they wanted to learn about traditional medicines. So we really have our work cut out for us trying to make that happen. It was a great experience. I thought the youth were great. They knew a lot more than they even really bargained themselves for, and they don't have the same academic knowledge that we do, but in my opinion, what they were actually saying is they wanted to achieve Indigenous food sovereignty through maintaining relationships and learning those relationships. So I thought that, well, this is really working out great. So what did we learn? Well, I kind of already talked a little bit about what we learned, but I had to do follow-up interviews, and I'm still in that process because, like I said, it is very important to have quality relationships in order to get a good response. But in some of the ones that I've done in the past, is we learned a lot about the temperature changes and the water level changes. And even my own lifetime, those are things that I've noticed, because we spent a lot of time going down the river. Every year we go down the river that's in our community, and we see the differences. Like Joe, the one elder, Muckanuck is his name, he talks about the effects on the fish and wildlife that he's noticed in his lifetime. And when we were tanning the moose hide, it was when we kind of got into the first discussion about climate change, is when I realized, well, maybe I should go that route. It was because he said, right about that now. We were brushing off the fur. I started picking out all these ticks, and we must have picked out, I think I lost count at 13 or 14. And he said originally, like back when he first started harvesting, there was no ticks. Even if anything, maybe one or two at the maximum, but 13 and higher was absolutely unheard of. And he brought up the issue of the, pretty much about resource management, and how they've been allowing the herbicide spraying, which is causing havoc in our communities. There's less muskrat, less beaver, less berries, and that herbicide kills everything. It kills our plants, it kills our medicines, the sage, tobacco, all of those. They want to have a clean environment, and the idea here is these four guiding principles kind of explains how we aren't able to fully achieve or possibly have issues achieving food sovereignty in our community, because the animals and wildlife are changing. And like Leora and my mother were explaining, it's very important for us to have those connections, especially with our clans, and even more so the animals in our territory, because it informs our knowledge systems. And when they're threatened with climate change, it becomes a real scary issue. So that's why I thought we need to work with youth and have them having those strong relationships. And eventually they'll spread out into others, and hopefully we can have some really meaningful future engagements. I think we are. We got funding for my mom, and Sylvia Plain is going to be coming in our community and building a birch bark canoe from scratch. So in turn, they're getting the opportunity, and it all started from just asking them what they wanted. And we thought that was the way to go. So, Miigwech, I am always short, but I hope that you guys learned something. And it will be done. I'm not done writing my paper yet. It's due in June, so you will see it, and more things will come from it then. So, thank you.
Next, we'll be presenting J.C. Chiblow on her presentation on Anishinaabeg food sovereignty. She fields questions from the intimate group that came together to listen to this really wonderful panel.
I guess I am interested in your interactions with the youth, just like wondering about inclusion. So you said like the youth are at like different high schools, so that was really difficult. I'm just like wondering about how you tackled issues of including different youth, or like LGBT2S youth, and just like kind of approaching sort of different like equity and diversity issues with like within your community.
Well, I definitely focused only on Garden River youth, like Garden River First Nation youth, and we just went to the high schools because there's like five or six different ones, and you can get their emails online, or you can just call the principal and they'll approve it and send it out to their students. And we have, what are they called, education assistants?
Liaisons,
education liaisons at each high school. So the idea was we sent out the forms and information to them, and then they sent it out to the rest of them all, and everybody was welcome that's from our community. There ended up being people just walking in, so it was like everybody that was welcome, and there was no like no one not allowed. So even if a non-Indigenous, there was non-Indigenous people that ended up coming in and they wanted to learn, and they had a great learning experience, they explained as well. So I just, I don't know, the state following the Anishinaabeg rule that everybody's always welcome, but we will focus on more our people first.
Thank you for listening to this episode and the words and knowledge that JC Chibolo shared at the annual Robarts Graduate Student Conference. A special thank you to Dr. Elaine Coburn at Glendon College, York University, for facilitating this really engaging panel. Next week, we'll be posting Leora Gainsworth presentation at the question and answer period and discussion that occurred with participants who attended the panel. Jimmy Gwetch. We are.